you know, it's kind of an hour and everything. It's not a lot of times someone gets the opportunity to. 1, 2, 3.
Welcome to the Off Duty Podcast, the podcast where we interview the men and women of law enforcement and help you to learn about the person behind the bed. If this is your first time tuning in, thank you. Please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast on so that you do not miss an episode when new episodes are released. My name is Anthony McNeil, retired police officer and your host. Let's get started. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Off Duty Podcast. Once again, it's me, your boy, Anthony McNeil, back to share another episode with you and help humanize the badge. Today, we have a first on the podcast. We have our very first police chief, not just any chief. This young man is 29 years old, and yes, he is the chief of police. He's an 11-year vet. He's a member of the Isle of Police Department down in Louisiana. Please help me welcome Chief Daniel Smith. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Oh, very well. You doing all right?
I'm doing good, sir. I'm doing good. Everybody that listens to the podcast always knows what my first question is, and that's why law enforcement?
Oh, why law enforcement? I anticipated this question, thought of 100 different ways to answer it. you know, the truth is I don't have quite as generic of a version as, you know, some may have for this question. Mine's always a little bit different than the rest of the class. But mine started, I'd say earlier in life. I had extremely good parents. I can't say that we had just too bad struggles at home. I mean, we had the love for sure, but, you know, we were kind of a low income family. We moved from place to place. At one point I was in government housing, different things like that. My dad actually was a logger. I worked in the logging woods for the majority of my childhood. So there was, you know, different times of year, the winter and things like that, when we really struggled worse than other times. And I can remember him working, you know, probably 16, 18 hour days sometimes, and, you know, not being able to be home and things like that. So my initial response as a child was, hey, I'm going to try to be home. You know, when he was at home with us, he was super involved, great parent, you know, mother as well. But I remember wanting to be home more than my parents were home with us. You know, I wanted to be able to provide, but also be at home as much as I could. So, you know, my choosing of a career, you know, started there. And law enforcement was something that actually became more attractive to me in high school. I was actually bullied a little bit earlier on, kind of junior high age, early high school. So I struggled a little bit with that. Probably my senior year of high school, I made the decision based off of a guy that kind of started mentoring me and by the place where I worked and visit with me, and we'd talk about it. And, you know, he'd tell me about the job and benefits, things like that. Of course, pay was nothing that was ever anything to brag about, but we would talk about the job in general and, you know, the time off and the benefits. It helped, you know, with his family because he was at home, you know, at some point every day for an abundance of time. He was able to do things with his kids he wanted to do. And he was also able to do things like mentor me. So he kind of set the initial example as far as a law enforcement officer and somebody that I could look up to. But, you know, to backtrack a little bit, a year before that, my junior year of high school, I actually took the first leap into public service and made an attempt to join the military, which is something that a lot of people know about and some don't. But I actually tried to go into the National Guard, and I was rejected based on, at the time, I was a super, super unhealthy person. I had blood pressure problems. I actually got medicated, but I didn't actually learn about the blood pressure problems until I went to the military training to attempt to, you know, join, enlist and everything. And my first step was going to be military, and it didn't work out because of the health issues I had at the time. So, you know, back in fast forward mode, law enforcement was kind of the next step because I had an in with my buddy that worked locally where I was at. He was able to get me in with the sheriff at the time. So I went and interviewed with him a couple of times, and, you know, he liked me, he liked my personality, and I just kind of got my foot in the door and started working in dispatch there for a while before I moved to patrol. But, you know, it immediately became a passion. It was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to be an example to other people, but I also wanted to be able to provide for my family and be there for my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. How many kids you have?
Right now I have a little boy and I have two stepdaughters.
How old are they?
And they are my whole world. My little boy's two.
Okay.
He'll be three in February. He's something else. And little girls are 6 and 7 years old.
Nice. Now you said a lot there. Let's start with the military and not getting accepted into the military. What'd that feel like?
I'll tell you, you know, based on, you know, just before that was kind of the phase where I, you know, was bullied a little bit. And I'm not going to say that I had any kind of depression issues, but, you know, I had a self-image issue. And, you know, for me to not be accepted into something that was, you know, supposed to be, you know, a great thing, could take me to great places, you know, and something that, you know, at what point they drafted for, you know, that was kind of a blow that I didn't immediately recover from, you know. So
how long did it take you to overcome all of that?
Well, honestly, it was a couple of years, you know, before I was able to say, you know what, I'm moving on and, you know, I'm going to try something else. I'm still going to be involved in public service. But I actually didn't pursue the physical fitness until I was getting ready for the police academy, which was a couple of years later.
Okay. Now you said when you were younger, you weren't in the best of shape. Was that just from not exercising, not eating correctly? What was that? Or just everything with home life or?
Well, I would say it was kind of one of those totality of the circumstances events where, you know, I didn't watch what I ate. I didn't, you know, I didn't really have anyone that monitored anything like that. So I was, you know, I had kind of a sugar habit. And, of course, I didn't really exercise a whole lot. I actually was slightly involved in sports. I played football a little in high school, but I was never just super involved. I was more the outdoors guy, hunted and fished all the time. And I didn't worry about exercise any. And there's kind of a genetic trait there to where, you know, somewhat predestined to be overweight, but also later on, I understood that I can control that to an extent.
Do you remember the moment when you said, okay, enough of this, I need to make a change?
Absolutely. I can honestly narrow down the day.
Okay.
I had been involved in law enforcement. I worked in dispatch for about a year. I worked in jail for a little while, and I went to try out for the academy before I went to the patrol position, and the run killed me. I still wasn't active at this point. I knew what I was getting into as far as the academy. The guys that went before me was like, look, it's going to be a little tougher than what you think. But I also had the perception of, you know, looking at some of the guys I worked with, and I'm saying, you know, if they could do it, then I could do it. But my mind wasn't right. You know, I wasn't in it. I was wanting to be involved, but I wasn't 100%. And that was something that needed to be 100%. So struggling on the run to get into the academy and actually having to wait on the next one, was the breaking point. I actually left the department that I started with and went to where a couple of my buddies had left. We had kind of a split with the department. So I went north about an hour to a small police department where the chief interviewed me. You know, he hired me and we talked about it. And he told me, he said, I need to see, you know, some initiative as far as physical fitness stuff goes. I need to see you get to where you need to be to get through this. He said, you know, it's kind of an hour and everything. It's not a lot of times someone gets the opportunity to, you know, do what I had the opportunity to do. Usually if you, you know, if you don't make it in the first time, you're going to, you know, find something else to do, honestly. But, you know, I just kind of had some drive at that point. I said, well, it's, you know, it's going to change. So I was hired in January of that year and I started my training pretty hardcore about March. And I remember there was about a three to four month period that I dropped 75 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, just a drastic change. And it was running. You know, I was working patrol at night over there because I had finished FTO and everything. And I was ready to go, but I hadn't been through the academy yet. So I had a lot of limitations, but I was working night shift over there for them. And I dropped that weight and like I was ready. My mind was made up that that it was going to happen. I would get run before and after work. My diet just went just complete reverse from where it was at. I was chicken, just so much chicken. I got burned out on chicken, and it was bland, and it was baked, or it was boiled, and I was, oh my gosh, chicken don't taste the same today. And this is years later.
Yeah. Now you hear a lot of people that go through these transformations. It's obviously not easy, because if it was, more people would do it. Right. Was there a point where you just wanted to say to hell with this, or was your determination just too big to fail?
I'll be honest with you. During that time, I don't remember there being anything that would have stopped me or anything that was going to slow me down. Because at this point, I had basically failed at two attempts to, better myself and make myself a public servant, and I don't remember there being a point where I was going to slow down, or I even had the first thought to change paths. I never applied for anything else. I wasn't going to give myself a second option. Okay. 'Cause it's always easier to leave what you're doing. If you got something else out there, if you say, well, if I don't make it through this, I can go do that. So I didn't allow opportunity to come in for me to leave or, to pursue anything else. I was going to do that, or I just, I didn't know what was going to happen if I didn't make it again. But as soon as the weight started coming off at a pretty rapid rate, and I was able to, go from my initial quarter mile without stopping to 6 to 8 miles a day, nonstop running, I knew that I was going to make it in. And, at that point, it was honestly going to be about winning physical fitness awards, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you mentioned that when you were in high school and everything, you went through the whole bullying, period. Once that weight started coming off, that had to have done a lot for your confidence and your self-esteem.
It did. It was a complete 180. At that point, when the weight started coming off and I was receiving attention places that I didn't get it before, I never forgot where I came from, and to this day I haven't, but, I was able to look at the world around me from a different perspective. I didn't walk into somewhere and feel self-conscious about anything. I was able to maintain conversation with people without wondering, what they're thinking of me. And to this day, that hasn't changed. I haven't got back to the point of, worrying about anyone else at all, as far as, what their thoughts are, wondering if their immediate thought of me is something negative. My confidence changed, when I was at work too, because I knew that, I knew the respect level that law enforcement would receive talking to me, when before, and then talking to me after I was in better shape, because, as a kid, I would see, the overweight police officer that walked in, and I'm wondering, what's this guy going to do? I mean, what's he capable of if I decide that I'm finna try to get away from him, and the respect level from people changed just based on my appearance. I had more of a professional appearance.
Yeah. Yeah. Growing up as a kid, were there moments where, you might not have been the best kid you could have been, as a result of your self-esteem, or any, did that cause you to act out in any way, any certain way?
Well, I'll say, there's absolutely no perfection in the childhood of anyone. I've got a 2-year-old that's rambunctious, and he's just now talking. So, I didn't necessarily act out of rebellion, pure rebellion or anything like that. But I will say, I didn't have as much attention paid to me as my kids do. It was a different world we lived in at the time. I had more freedom. I was able to get out and do things. And
yeah.
And of course I hid stuff from my parents. When I was a teenager, I did a lot of things I wasn't supposed to do. And it wasn't just a rebellion thing. It was basically because I could, I could get out and go to my buddy's house and, do whatever they was doing and hang out with them and, be gone overnight. And parents wouldn't really question it. They were busy. There was times when they'd both be gone overnight when I was a teenager, and they wouldn't know what I was doing. But I also never got in a situation where I got in trouble. Doesn't mean I wasn't doing it. It means I was sneaky.
So, you never got caught.
right. And the situation was there to where, I had siblings, and it seemed like every one of my siblings got in trouble. you know, and they would have more attention paid to them. And the, you know, the unannounced situation was that if I ever got caught doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing, you know, if cops brought me home, you know, even at school, if I had gotten serious trouble, then I would have had a lot more limitations than I did. But honestly, you know, me not ever getting in trouble does not at all mean that I wasn't doing it. It just means that I was better at hiding it than my siblings were.
Well, how did your parents feel once you told them you were going into law enforcement?
You know, I got a positive response from them, you know, as far as the pride goes. They're, you know, they're proud of me. They want me to do this and that. And, you know, they were never really parents that encouraged me to pursue education. It was kind of this deal to where I was going to go to work in one of the main industries locally, which, you know, logging or oil field is just about all we have here. So I was going to do one of those, and it was really never thought of otherwise. And then, you know, I told them I was looking at the military first, of course, but then law enforcement, they're like, oh, well, okay. You know, and then I started bringing home checks when I was working dispatch at $8 an hour. And they're like, you know, you're not really going to be able to make a living doing that. But I told them, you know, I said, it's going to get better at some point. Yeah. You know, I'll struggle until it gets better because this is something I want to do. So, you know, them worrying about the financial aspect of it was kind of a negative thing in the beginning, but, you know, later on they understood it. And when they, you know, when they seen that I was getting places, you know, places they honestly, I don't believe ever imagined me going, then, you know, it's really became a great pride thing. I get, you know, they're proud of me every time I see them, you know, they're proud of me for this or that, you know, it's just always something going on they're hearing about or seeing on the news.
Yeah.
So it's really worked out. And I have a great relationship with them to this day.
That's awesome. Now, I retired in 2013, but to this day, I remember my very first day on the road. It was my first day in the FTO program, and the first traffic stop I made with my FTO, I was still in the shadow phase, and we stopped this guy. It was just a traffic stop for a routine traffic stop, and turns out this guy had like 40-some suspensions on his driver's license or something like that, so he was going to jail. But when he got out of the car, this guy was 6'7", I think 360, 370. And my FTO, I just remember him looking at me and saying, whatever you do, don't piss this guy off. You remember the first run you went on?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I was a reserve officer for several years and I was limited to, you know, getting out and things like that. I say several years. It was probably a year and a half or so before I actually went to patrol that I was a reserve officer. So, you know, I got just bits and pieces of it before I actually got to do it on my own. But the, you know, the significant events that really stand out to me, I wouldn't say necessarily are just in the beginning. They're just kind of sporadic. You know, the first patrol event that I can remember the best, you know, that I can remember every bit of was a fatal accident that I went on, you know, and that's something that, you know, just doesn't quite leave.
Yeah.
But I was also 19 years old and we had, six people pass away in an accident, you know, and it was my first fatal and it may have been the first wreck that I ever was the first responder to. But I don't remember the first day, but it's the first fatal accident. That's definitely something I'll never forget.
It's funny you say that because I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the last episode. But that later on that day, on my first day, I had a fatal accident.
Wow.
And it was a semi truck on the freeway, had tipped over and the driver had the window down in his cab and his head ended up hitting a rail on the overpass. There was a road that passed underneath a busy road, a 4-lane road. And literally his blood and brain matter was dripping down on the passing cars. You know, so that was, yeah, that was my first day, you know. How in the world did you become chief at 29?
You know, I can tell you it's a story. I was, the second department I worked for, it's about an hour from here. So I was there and I had a great job. I was actually, you know, I had been in law enforcement probably 4 years at this point, and I made sergeant there. I was over basically all the patrol. It was a small department, though. It wasn't, you know, nothing to be just super proud of, but I was also probably 23 years old and a sergeant. And had a great job, but the problem with that department was that we didn't have any benefits. And I had, you know, I'd always said that one of my reasons for pursuing this career was the benefits itself, the retirement. I mean, being able to go home and, you know, enjoy some life with some age left, hopefully, if the Lord lets me do it. Mm-hmm. That's always been something I look forward to. And I, you know, and I told the boss I love the job and everything, but I'm doing that. So I came to work here in the parish I live in, which we have parishes here in Louisiana versus counties. I came to work for the sheriff's office here. They offered, you know, more money than I was making at the time. Plus the benefits were great. You know, it's a good retirement system and everything. And I've still got a good bit of time invested in that one. But I was with the sheriff's office for 3 years here. And at that time, I'd been, I guess, about 8 years in altogether. I didn't really have the idea to do it. I'd been living here in this parish, or in this town, rather, for, I guess, 2.5 or so years at the time. But I had people in the town. They would, you know, stop by my house and visit with me and some of the council members, things like that. They honestly, they weren't happy with the police chief that was here at the time, and it is an elected position.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of people expressed, you know, they weren't happy with it, and they knew my work with the sheriff's office, and they, you know, familiar with me in general because I got super involved in the community here, just like everywhere else I've lived. I do mentor programs. I coach ball. You know, I'm doing things with the people, with the kids, pretty mm-hmm. well all the time, no matter where I'm at, and that was long before I was elected. But, you know, people came to me and they, you know, kind of mentioned me running for police chief, you know, and I knew I was 27 at the time. And I said, you know, that's kind of something that I'd want to do for my last couple of years on the job, just to kind of finish it off. It'd be a, you know, what I thought at the time would be a low stress job. It turned out to be a little more than I thought it was, but I love it. I got to tell you, I love it. But, the public, you know, mostly gave me the idea of it, and I played with it in my mind for a while. And, you know, and I actually didn't grow up here. Typically an elected official, you know, they're from where they're running at. But, you know, the time comes for me to make a decision. And I actually had to take a pretty big leap because I had to leave the department I worked for to run because there was a policy given that the town's in the same parish where the department is. I couldn't run against an incumbent. So I wanted to work for another small police department pretty close by. And, you know, I let the chief there know that I had intended to run for this spot, and he encouraged 100%. Gave me a full-time job that he knew was going to be temporary. So about a year before the election, you know, I took the leap to decided I was going to run and went to work for a separate department, which changed my livelihood a little bit. I made quite a bit less money, but I went to work for that department and worked there in the duration of my election. So, you know, I kind of ended up here from influence from the public, you know, people that I respected that asked me to do it. I don't make a whole lot more money, really no more money than I did at the sheriff's office here. You mm-hmm. know, so it wasn't necessarily a financial move. It was more of a, you know, what's next for me move. Cause I, you know, I'd supervised, I'd worked K-9, I'd worked investigations. I'd done pretty much everything that I could do in law enforcement up to this point. As far as local level goes, you know, I had never worked for the state or federal government, but I'd reached a point where, you know, working for a police department or a sheriff's office, I had done pretty well everything that I could do at 27 years old.
What was the response? I mean, because 29, I mean, hell, you got to admit, 29 is young as hell for a chief.
It is, absolutely. I believe I'm the youngest in the state. At the last conference I went to, I know that I was the youngest. Of course, they all let me know about it. They're kind of wondering what I was doing there. First conference I ever went to, they wondered if I was there with my chief. And I said, actually, I'm not. I'm one of those myself.
How big is your department?
Right now, we're short. I've got five guys working for me. We've really struggled this year as far as employment goes, which is another story. But I've got five under me. We operate pretty much all the time. Today, you know, for example, there's me and then one other guy. So I, you know, I'm a proactive chief. I'll get out and I still work traffic. I still take calls, you know, so it's a little different than they're used to with chiefs.
Usually that's, you know, that's everyone's goal, but where do you think you go from here as far as law enforcement?
Well, that was a really big question that I had for myself after I got into it, because I'm not really one to want to, you know, just go to different departments, leave people high and dry, things like that. But I also recognize my age as one that doesn't really show me at a stopping point. So what I decided in the meantime was to pursue education, because I was always, I mean, honestly, I'm a nerd. I will sit there and read. You know, when I first got supervising was the biggest point to where I was really worried about legal things, like legal liability. I was making decisions, especially now, but even when I was supervising shifts and patrol, I always got to, you know, some pretty deep studies. And then after I got this position, I said, you know what? I never went to college. I thought about it a few times, even registered a few times, but I actually registered with a kind of a fast track program with a university, the closest one's in New Orleans. But I just finished my associate's in criminal justice, and I'm only 10 months out from finishing my bachelor's. But
okay,
I fully intend by the end of this term, I've got a little bit over 2 years left in this term, I'll hopefully have my master's in business administration. Right now, I'm almost done my bachelor's. I got a 4.0. I actually love education.
Yeah.
I'm looking at, you know, getting myself more qualified for something else. I don't know what else yet. I'm, you know, I've looked at something federal, but I know that, you know, one thing that I've learned from working for elected officials is that there does come a point in time, whether there's term limits or not, there's a point in time where, you know, there's only so much that a man can do in a spot before he needs to, you know, step down and let somebody with some new ideas and fresh ideas step in. There's, you know, there's a limit, and sometimes pride and ego and things like that keeps somebody believing that they can, you know, press forward and continue doing the same deal. But I fully believe that, you know, my time will come that I'll need to step down from this and let somebody, you know, kind of take it over and bring some new life into the department. I'm not saying it's anytime soon, but I want to be well qualified for what I do next. So right now it's pretty much primarily focusing on education and, you know, finishing this. Definitely up to my master's, and I'll just kind of see what's available when the time comes. I feel like I need to step down.
Yeah. If in the future, if one day your kids came to you and said, "Dad, I want to go into law enforcement," how would you feel about it?
You know, honestly, I don't want to stop anybody from being a public servant. You know, it's something that I believe I have a lot of pride in, and, you know, my employees or coworkers, you know, everyone I've worked with has a sense of pride about themselves as far as being in law enforcement. But I also know that there's a lot of changes in society. There's, you know, it's a lot of people frown on it that used to support it heavily, but we also have a lot of local support here. I don't have any issues that are had in, you know, some of the larger cities and things like that. So I don't necessarily believe that I would turn, you know, my kid away from it, but I think there's a long conversation that we would have about the mentality of it and, you know, kind of what happens to you as a person once you do it, and do it for a while, because it's not, you know, I'm not the same person I was before I started. I'm not, you know, in pretty much any sense. I'm not saying I'm a, you know, worse person or anything like that, but it changes the way you perceive the world around you, honestly.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And again, for regular listeners of the podcast, you know, I've said it numerous times, you know, my last 5 years, I was forced to go inside to work, which was someplace I didn't want to go because of health issues. And it changed me big time because I became more cynical. Like you say, it changed my view of people to the point where I couldn't stand people, you know. But right. the funny thing about the whole situation was, it wasn't until my last day that I realized why God put me in that position. And again, I won't go into the whole story because I've told it so many times on the podcast, but during that 5 year period, there was a young man about 12 years old that came into the department that was having some issues at home with his mom and his grandmother. And long story short, he and I had a conversation, lasted about 30 minutes. And the day that I retired was probably about it had to have been about 8 months later after that, after he had come in with his mom, because she had brought him in because she couldn't control him anymore. And he came in and they both brought me a card and said, I just want to say thank you. And that was, you know, she said that since that day that you spoke with my son, you know, he's doing better in school. He listens. He doesn't hit me or hit my mom. And it was that day I realized why God put me in that position. As much as I hated being there, that made it all worthwhile. Right. And I can definitely relate to what you say, what you're saying about the job does change you. And you have to be really careful. And I think what a lot of people outside of law enforcement or people that are in law enforcement really have to try to focus on. And I know one of the things for me was I had to have activities outside of law enforcement. I had to have friends outside of law enforcement so I can have that balance.
Right.
And when you're not working, what are some of the things you do to kind of get your mind off the job?
Well, I'll say, you know, my number one thing is going to be kids. You know, I take my kids to do stuff. We go to the park all the time. We'll go, you know, go walk in different places, arcades. I mean, this year's really changed, you know, the way we do things in public, mm-hmm. know, mask required and things like that. So it's a little different now than it was before. But, you know, I like doing stuff with the kids. It definitely, you know, helps to humanize me. But, you know, my passion, number one passion as far as hobby goes, gym, I'll spend, you know, at least an hour a day, 6 days a week in the gym, an hour to an hour and a half. And that helps me a lot. I go after work. So, you know, anything I have built up from work, it just goes away at the gym. I honestly don't know how my mentality would be if I didn't get to go, you know, as regular as I do. It helps a lot to release any negative energy that I have, because the last thing that you want to do is bring it home.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll go spend some time there. I do a lot of outdoor activities still. I'd go hunting and fishing. We're getting ready for hunt season right now. I love to hunt. I love to fish. So I stay outside as much as I can. And really, you know, I have involvement with a few different friends. We'll do barbecues and things like that. You know, I try to, like you said, get friends outside of law enforcement. I do have several now. There was a point where I didn't. And once I did get some, I seen the necessity of it. So I 100% understand and agree with what you said about that. So, you know, the gym and kind of outdoor things is my main hobbies.
You had mentioned negative energy. And one of the things I like to do when I bring guests onto the podcast is kind of go through their social media a little bit and try to learn certain things about them. And I came across a quote that you had shared, and the quote was, someone is out there holding their breath waiting for you to fail. Make sure they suffocate. Have you experienced any of that towards yourself in life or in the position that you're in?
Well, you know, there's always going to be something like that. As long as you are an individual that's looking to better yourself, or, you know, progress in any way, whether it be on the job, I mean, it could be in the gym. You're trying to, you know, reach a new, one rep max or something like that. There's always going to be critics. And, it's usually the type of people that aren't really looking to do anything, or they have no expectations of being able to do anything themselves. So there's always those people out there. And for me personally, there's been several, especially being, you know, in a political role and actually having been through an election myself and working for other elected officials, but mostly, you know, going through an election myself, there's people that, you know, they had zero expectation of me getting where I'm at. And then, you know, once I was in, it's kind of the thing, well, you know, we'll see how this goes. And, you know, there's no way he's going to be able to do that at his age and things like that. And I can honestly say that, you know, each statistic that the department keeps record of has increased since I've been where I'm at. So, you know, I like being able to prove them wrong in that sense. I always expect to have them out there that, you know, has lower expectations for me than I do for myself. But honestly, that's one of the things that drive me. You know, I want that. I don't want people to be negative, but if they're going to be negative, I don't mind them being negative towards me. It's something that I expect. And honestly, something that I embrace, because that's one of my biggest motivators is knowing that there's those out there with that opinion. I may not hear it directly, you know, or even a third party, but I mean, you just know sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back to your social media, I think people don't realize, but social media says a lot about oneself when you really start digging into it. And one thing I noticed with your social media, and now since I had a chance to talk to you, I get it. You don't smile much. You're very serious. I see why you're in the position that you're in. And I think that has to do with it. And you could correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think that's why you're so driven. I think you're wiser than your 29 years. And that's the way you come across to me. So I can understand why you were asked to be in the position that you're in, which, like I said, it's something rare nowadays. You don't see someone under 30 as a police chief. But after talking to you, I definitely understand why the people in the community came to you. On a fun question here, do you ever plan on smiling in any of your photos on Instagram?
Well, you know, you're not the first person to bring that up, I assure you. And it's, you know, and the crazy thing is, I think it might have started when I was a kid. I had buck teeth, man. I had it going on. And they're, you know, much straighter now, but I think, you know, I don't even remember smiling much as a kid outside of just a normal situation. But for pictures and things like that, I mean, that is, you know, that's nothing I've had for several years now. But, you know, honestly, 9 times out of 10, someone looks at me, if they know me, then they know my mind in a thousand different places.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have ADHD, so I'm not able to focus, you know, just a whole bunch on one thing. So, you know, if you look at me and I'm just kind of a blank stare, then I'm thinking about a billion things at the same time, and that may contribute to it. You know, but I do have a series of pills that I try to keep. It's kind of, you know, I'm back and forth on it because I'll have the serious speech with somebody, which honestly works well with interviews and interrogations. Mm-hmm. But then I also have the side where, you know, I'll coach baseball or coach football or something like that. You know, and I try to keep a positive perspective the whole time, which does include smiling. But, you know, anyone that knows me knows that, you know, me not smiling does not mean that I'm unhappy or, you know, doesn't mean anything like that. It's kind of a, I guess you'd call it a neutral emotion.
Okay.
I don't like to give too much away with facial expressions. And I honestly comes out in pictures more than I would like it to. But I've actually been approached about it several times. It's always serious. You know, I'm not, you know, you can ask anyone I'm around on a regular basis. They honestly never know when I'm serious, but I think that's because I can have the same look with 12 different attitudes. So, it helps and hurts.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. On another note, switch it up here for a second. If you could have dinner with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Well, you know, I want to give the generic answer and, you know, and go with a, you know, a relative that's passed or something like that. But we also, you know, I don't think I have any that I just left on bad terms, and it may, you know, it probably wouldn't help me if it were available, you know, in any way to do it. So, you know, going to my nerdy side, I love history, pretty much everything about history. So I'm, you know, leaning more towards a historical figure. Honestly, Abraham Lincoln is the first one that comes to mind, our 16th president. And the reason is because, you know, I would like to ask him where he would expect America to be so many years later. You know, what his expectations were at that point, if he could guess,
mm-hmm.
you know, what would be going on in 2020, which, you know, would be a crazy number to him, I'm sure. But, you know, I'd just like to know what his expectations, you know, as a great leader in American history, I'd like to know what his expectations would be, you know, if he could imagine what things would be like at this point. Of course, you know, there's no way for him to know or understand the technological advances and things like that. But just as far as society itself goes, you know, I'd like to know what his plans would have been. And honestly, I'd like to learn about a lot of the untold history, because, you know, we don't get all of it.
Right, right. How do you think he would have felt about everything that's going on in the world right now?
You know, I would, you know, my answer today might be different than my answer next week. But it's honestly hard to say. I think there would be a, you know, a sense of disappointment to an extent, but he would honestly likely be amazed at a lot of it, you know, because just so much advancement, you know, just even in the generation that we're in now compared to, you know, 20 years ago, there's just drastic changes when it comes to technology and things like that. But, you know, from a perspective of, you know, political things and all that kind of stuff, there's, you know, there's probably a lot of historical figures that would have a sense of disappointment about it, you know, from them, you know, being adamant about pulling the country together, you know, mm-hmm. in so many degrees, and, you know, a lot of work being put in there for a united nation, you know, for everyone to be together, for there to be such division in so many areas, I think there'd be a pretty great sense of disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Have you guys experienced a lot or any of what's been going on as a result of all this, these protests or anything down there?
You know, honestly, we haven't. I'm not going to victimize any law enforcement here and say that we have experienced it. You know, just every once in a while, you know, we'll work traffic or something and there'll be, you know, somebody coming through from somewhere. As far as the locals go, I mean, none at all. We have support from the majority of our communities here, and we're, you know, we're thankful for them, and they, you know, return that feeling to us. So, if, you know, if we catch it, it's going to be, you know, people passing through from other places, and it's, you know, it's pretty easy to disregard it. We, you know, we utilize body cameras. We cover everything that we need on our end. And I'm not the one that's, you know, immediately ignores, you know, what someone has to say. So if it's me personally that's, you know, dealing with someone that has an issue enough to make them want to bring up some type of, you know, reform or, you know, taking the funds away from us, things like that, I like to listen to what they have to say. Honestly, I want to receive their justification for whatever they're talking about. So I don't shut them down, but I'll sure listen to them and then, you know, give them my spiel on it after that. And I can usually, you know, come to some kind of an agreement with anyone. If they're mad, they're usually mad for a reason. And I like to know what it is.
Well, Daniel, like I said earlier, man, you're definitely wise beyond your years, and I can see why you're in a position that you're in. I like I told my last guest, you know, I like to consider myself a good judgment of character, and I know we've had nothing more than a phone call here, but one of the things I've always prided myself on was my ability to read people, and I see nothing but good things in your future, young man. I
appreciate it.
I encourage you to keep doing the things you're doing. You're obviously on the right path. And as again, I see nothing but success in your future. And, you know, let the haters hate, and you keep pushing forward and keep doing what you're doing as a man and as a husband and as a chief there, and just making people proud, and keep going after those dreams and knocking them down, you know.
I appreciate that. I really do.
Now, yeah, we're going on almost 45 minutes here, and I know you're working, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. But I just like to end here real quick with something I like to call rapid fire.
All right.
All right, but I got 10 questions that I'm going to hit you with, okay?
All right.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Super strength.
I think I already know the answer to this next one, but your greatest achievement?
Being a father.
That's what I thought you would say, yeah. Favorite movie?
It's going to have to be Avengers.
Biggest fear?
I think my biggest fear would be my kids growing up without me. You know, something happening to take me out of their lives early on.
One food you could never give up?
It's going to have to be ice cream. I don't do much of it, but I enjoy it when I do.
Worst thing you did as a kid?
What was that?
Worst thing you did as a kid?
Oh, gosh. My mom's probably going to listen to this. honestly, I would say drink alcohol. It was, and I would say kid, and I was young. That was not a good situation.
Yeah, I can relate. First app you check on your phone in the morning?
First app. I would probably say text messages. I usually wake up with several of them. If it's not just a generic check my text, it's going to be probably Facebook.
Okay. First celebrity crush?
Oh, first celebrity crush. That's an easy one. I'm going to have to go with Daisy Duke.
Okay. That's a good one. And last question. Is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal crackers?
Absolutely not.
Chief Smith, sir, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, man, keep doing what you're doing. You got a long career ahead of you, I'm sure. A long, successful career. There's big things out there waiting for you, young man. Go get them.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, you know the routine. If this is your first time tuning in, please subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast on so that you do not miss an episode when new episodes are released. Make sure you leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to us on. And once again, I'm happy to announce that the Off Duty Podcast has been named the number 8 most must listen to police podcast on the internet by the FeedSpot website. And we appreciate that. Appreciate all your support. All you guys out there, you take care. Daniel, my man, you stay safe, brother.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Have a good one.